Today's show is brought to you by the Star City Murders, the new serial killer thriller now streaming on Tubi.
Yes, Axel, my film. We're on Tubi now. Directed by Giles Andrews, starring myself, Heath Sentazzo, Tim Russ, Michelle Lukes, Austin Highsmith Garces, among many other greats. We have a new home. Now, you can still get it on Amazon, Apple, Vudu to rent or buy, but now for free, you can stream on Tubi and actually, Axel, Sling TV as well.
Nice. We just did it the other day. It's super simple. If you don't see it on the home screen, just search Star City. It'll come right up. You'll be watching it for free. And Tubi, there's some ad breaks, but they did great ad breaks. It's like it was made for it. So stream it now. The Star City Murders, baby.
And press like that you liked it. It'll help. Thank you.
Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. We are here to talk about House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 5, Regent. You can find out more about us at dvrpodcast.com. You can become a patron like Trisha, Amy, Sherry, Kevin, and Viva recently have become, either paid or free, at patreon.com/DVR. Heath and I actually just did a kind of TV life check-in, a fun little pod that we dropped last week, Patreon exclusive, so we like to do that over there too, patreon.com/DVR. And of course, I'm here with Gina. How are you doing, Gina?
I'm doing pretty well, Axel. I'm excited to talk about this episode because I think it tees up something. It tees up something really cool for the next episode that I'm really excited about. So it nice. All goes together, right?
Yeah. I thought that this was, hey, look, every episode of this show is high quality and interesting. And I always am surprised when the episodes end because I want it to go on more, right? Like it never... None of these episodes have ever dragged for me, but after our crazy episode last week, this was, I think, a good kind of marshaling of forces, pieces on the table, literally in several scenes, right? Mm-hmm. Where we kind of take a step back. We're at episode 5, we're at perfect place in the middle of the season, 8 episodes. And we can take a step back. I like when I saw in the notes what you have planned because I feel the same way. It's a good time to kind of look at really what's going on because everything's happening so fast. You know, I often don't even think, what team am I? Am I team black? Am I team green? You know? And sometimes things happen on the show, like particularly with Alicent this episode for me, that I feel very differently than a lot of different podcasts, and I like to read recaps and stuff after the episode. So I'm interested to see what we think. Definitely a bit more Harrenhal. Maybe, I don't know how you're feeling about it.
Harrenhal.
But,
it's like the Myrinese knot in the book, Harrenhal.
It is a kind of almost a trope, right? Not only of the books, but of the show too, of like, we have to, other people have to kind of catch up or we have to get things to a certain point before we can get some other character to come in. So do we just abandon that character? Do we just check in or do we dive head first? And I feel like they decided to dive head first with Daemon and Harrenhal with mixed results for me.
Yeah, same. I'm honestly quite bored with Daemon and Harrenhal. And I do feel like this is some type of Alice. Is she Rivers or Waters?
Rivers.
I feel like this is some type of Alice Rivers whammy that has been mandated by Laerys to keep Daemon there. Like this is... I don't know. It's too tedious for it to not be intentional and to just be the magic of Harrenhal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I agree. I mean, I have to say that as soon, like with each scene when we came back, I was kind of listening to in my head, I heard us on the podcast last week saying, like, I hope we're not doing another week. And I was like, oh, we are. But I don't want to, you know, I think they may have made some more interesting choices of other people we could have been with, and they could have maybe condensed some of this story to communicate what was happening. But Matt Smith is enchanting. The sets are amazing. I have to say, I didn't feel it was successful completely, but I still enjoyed the scenes. I thought some of them were funny. And come on, when you get a scene of the guy fucking his mom, you gotta laugh.
I was like, who's this? And then it's like, oh my God, it's his mother. And he's literally kissing the mouth he came out of. And and then Alice Water says to him, it must be so hard not to have ever known your mother. So clearly that whole, you were my favorite son. It's like, he doesn't know because mom must have died in childbirth or shortly after with him. And I don't know. I was just like, damn, the incest in these Targaryens just like runs so deep. It's in their subconscious dreams.
Yeah. That was something else. And with Targaryens, you never know, right? Like, I don't think there was much history of that type of incest. It's usually brother-sister type of thing going on there. But uncle, niece, you know, whatever. But it was still, I'm with you. I feel like at first I didn't understand if, okay, is he at a magical place? And the weirwood or the dragons are just like, in the same way in Game of Thrones, we watched kind of the rise of magic, right? A little different perhaps in the books, but maybe a little bit similar, where it kind of creeps up on you and you say, oh, it's like this world, magic kind of is contagious. Is this what's happening? Like the dragons seem to be taking over the war. Is also this magic taking over Daemon? But at this point with her and the way she's fucking with him, and particularly that line too about the mother, I think that, he's being manipulated. I like your idea of Laris. There are some people who believe maybe she's not even real, that it's, you know, or it's some kind of other magic that's happening, whatever it is. It does seem like even though that's happening, Daemon is still making a decision. I am the fucking king, right?
Right.
He's still aware enough to make that decision.
Well, she's also encouraging that though as well.
Which is beneficial, add a third party into it would also be beneficial. And that would, if you were going to kind of fuck with Daemon, isn't that the way you do it? That's because you know you'd be easily successful. He's such an egotist. So
he really is. Oh my goodness. Yeah, the Harrenhal. I'm like, oh, I guess we are going to be at Harrenhal another week.
After that. What else did we get there? We got the dream, we got some food. We got some fun little Sir Strong stuff, right?
Yeah, he's a nice comic relief there at Harrenhal. I really like it. I mean, both of these kings and queens councils are just like the worst ever. Like, I don't know what the opposite of goat is, but they're both the complete opposite of that. they're not the greatest of all time. The woat. They're both woats, worst of all time.
I agree.
And I mean, the Queen's Council, they're just whiners. And I love how they kind of like, they refer to her as the gentler sex. And I'm like, they're clearly unaware of her childbirth scenes and what that all entails, because she is a beast.
Yeah.
and she's actually, she is one of the most measured, thoughtful, logical, caring people in this whole series.
You're speaking of Rhaenyra here, right?
Yes, Rhaenyra. She's so measured, and I think that's something she picked up from Rainey's for sure. But I think, you know, she's just so good with the kids, and even her crappy advisors, she summons that guy, Sir Alfred, I think it was, and he goes, "Are you dismissing me from the council?" And I'm like, "She should, you mofo."
Yeah.
And she's like, "No, I have a task for you." You know, she's just so measured. And I think it's, I want to even say, in the whole Game of Thrones world that we've seen televised, the only person that comes closest to her in their measuredness, trying to do what's right for the people and protect those around her, is actually Sansa in the end. Like, Dany, sure, in the beginning, but clearly she went, you know, she went Targaryen mad. She went full Targaryen.
Yes, exactly.
But there's something about the measured approach to it. I don't know. I really love Rhaenyra this season so much. I just think she should be the queen. She'd be a great queen. So I don't know. That's my love letter to Rhaenyra this season. And I like this weird relationship she now has with Missaria. You know, I think, you know, she could have just like cast out this woman that, you know, used to screw her uncle husband, but instead she takes the time to listen to her. And realizes, you know, this is someone that I can really work with and that, you know, she kind of trusts. So I don't know. I'm just a huge Rhaenyra fan, which I guess I've always been kind of team black, but I'm more so team black this season because of Rhaenyra specifically.
I totally agree. I think that this episode, we waited last episode. Where was she? She was, you're right, like everyone, where was she? She was waiting to get back. This episode, she is taking her role seriously as queen. And I think that she is making some moves. I think sending Sir Alfred, who's a pain in the ass, away, good move. But is she just sending him to Daemon anyway? Like, she doesn't really trust Daemon. So there is a little bit of a question there. Like, is she giving him an ally in some way, right? Just handing that to him. I do like her relationship with Missaria because she needed someone, right? She had no one around her. And I think that maybe, and especially now with Rhaenys dead, she doesn't have that person. So to have her is good. And the accent, as you have in the notes, very good, very better.
It is a lot better. So much better.
And I like that advisor role too. She's building something up. The way she reacts to what Jace does was very measured again, right? She didn't banish him or yell at him. I mean, he pretty much did, if I'm remembering it correctly, and I think Bub and Catfish talked about this, that he pretty much did similar to what, I can't remember, did to Dany, and Dany was like, "You defied the queen." You know, I can't. So she didn't do that, even though it's her son. She could have done that, right? She sees the benefit of it, even though it's the fucking phrase. And that scene was great too. But I like everything Rhaenyra is doing, but they've got to do something on the battlefield. You know what I mean? This is what we need to see, right?
Yeah. Like
they don't have the army. They're not in King's Land. Like, they're at such a strong disadvantage.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's why I think she asked Corlys to be her hand because
Thank you.
He's the master of the sea, right? So at least she'll, I mean, I think she always had his navies, but she'll have him. And while he doesn't maybe understand land battle so well, he does have, you know, a probably a mind for battle, at least at sea.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's also the big difference between Rhaenyra and House Green is the leaders in House Green that we've seen. I mean, Aegon and Aemond, Regent, they don't necessarily ask for advice. They more say what they want to do. And it seems like most of the time people agree with them. Mm-hmm. Whereas Rhaenyra is kind of, she bounces ideas off people.
She does.
You know, I think, and I
she's
think
a brainstormer.
That's something, yeah, she's a collaborator as yeah. well, right? Yep. She's, you know, and she doesn't like that just give me advice thing. She wants to be part of the conversation. You know, she'll listen to your ideas if you're not mandating them to her. But you know, she's got ideas too and wants those to be said. And yep. I think, you know, she even said, I was not raised with a sword in my hand because I was a girl. I understand kinda, how, you know, the houses yeah. and this and that. But, you know, she was a voracious reader. Like mm-hmm. we saw young Rhaenyra reading most of the time, yeah. You know, in most episodes. And she can't hunt. She brought back that boar, remember, from the... you know, Aegon's name day or celebration or whatever. And
okay, that's what I'm remembering. Because I remember we were talking a couple episodes ago, and I remember saying to myself, like, she has that warrior in her. And I was trying, but then when she said that line, I was like, wait, am I misremembering just because of the strength of the actress or the character? Mm-hmm. But there were certain circumstances, and also growing up as the princess, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. There's just a certain confidence that as a Targaryen, as a dragon rider, yeah. you know, that you have that in comparison, and people like, of course, naturally make the comparison to Alicent. It's totally different. It's a completely mm-hmm. different upbringing. And she, yeah. Rhaenyra has that strength inside her. She has that steel, you know, and that, Aegon's dream, right? Or Aegon's vision, which she told Jace the other episode, mm-hmm. she carries that within her, a destiny, a sense of destiny, right? Which is important, I think, for a person who needs to lead people.
Yeah.
I would suppose. Yeah. I've never been a king. Perhaps one day. Mm-hmm. But while we're talking about Rhaenyra, many people were very impressed with Bela this episode, little Jace too.
Yes.
And you ask good questions. Are they married yet? Yeah, they haven't. They're like, they cuddle up on each other, but they're betrothed though.
They're definitely betrothed. I was just like, it'd be nice to, you know, see these kids yeah. get married and have full happiness of that life while they can.
They got to elevate these characters, right? Like,
yeah,
they need these actors in the same way that the Aegon actor went from kind of whiny pervert last right. season to what he was for the first couple episodes before he got fucking fried.
yeah.
It was they, yeah. these kids need to do, I see the potential in both of these actors to do so. And obviously the right. show can do it. They need yeah. to rise up.
Yeah. And I think Bela really is. I think Corlys was very impressed with her. He yeah. was ready to name her heir because of, and she's like, listen, I'm fire and blood. You need salt and sea.
I love that.
And, you know, but yeah, she was quite impressive. And, you know, that goes to show like, yes, she was partially, I mean, that's mother and stepmother rearing. That is not Daemon rearing. I'm sorry. He's a horrible father. And she's even said sometimes I hate him, you know, in a previous episode. But I think, you know, Rhaenyra's been really good with her and her sister. And I think she gets it. And, you know, she loved her grandmother, too. Their grandmother had a lot to do. You know, it's the women influencing the women for sure.
Yeah.
And in their upbringing. Yeah.
You bring up, that was that scene was really interesting, not just for that amazing line, but the fact that she was acting on behalf of Rhaenyra, right? Mm-hmm. Like you need to be the hand, right? Like,
yeah,
let's do this. Like, wake up. That's her grandfather, right? Wake up.
Yeah.
Grandpa. And marshaling their side together. Cause like you said, it's very scattered. And that's when I think about it. Like, who could win? Who's good? I just, even though I am Team Black, I'm down with them. And I also think that the line, you know, should continue that way, even though I don't like Targaryens. I don't like any of them because I'm of Game of Thrones era little folk. I want a democracy, but they laughed at that.
I know. Poor Sam Wilson.
They laughed at that, motherfuckers. Yeah, they need to get it together. They need to get it together because they're just at an advantage from jump. And they may not, though. And if you want to segue before we talk about crispy Aegon into your dragon conversation, which I thought is very interesting. The conversation they have was kind of cool where mother and son start, like you said, brainstorming, right? Like instead of getting angry and trying, I am the queen. It leads to her openness, and this is a lesson of life. Her openness allows her for her mind to start working, and then he's open, and they come up with this idea, which we've been talking about, you've been talking about, like, we've got other dragons. This is a battle of dragons.
Mm-hmm. We need someone to ride them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, do we want to talk about that now, or should we talk about Crispy King and the phrase first?
Whatever you want. It's up to you.
Let's save the dragon talk for last, because I think that's going to be more fun. But let's briefly jump to the Eyrie, though. Okay, so I don't know who it was in the DVR group on Facebook that caught that Auntie Erin is actually mother from Raised with Wolves.
Yep, that was Grandpa James. Thank you.
It was a very brief scene between Lady Erin and Arena. God, all these names are so much the same. And I just said, why are the Erin women always so odd? Is it a requirement? Is it the castle?
That looked beautiful. They did a great, the intro to that too, the sweeping down through the castle and everything. That was great.
Well, the Eyrie is beautiful.
Yeah. Interesting scene too, right? Because, you know, you didn't say what size dragon. There was not, we talked about that. It's a lot to a burden to put on. And I think you reminded us, well, she wanted to be protected in some way. Is this really protection? And then she brings it up. So I thought that scene was interesting because it's like, where is this going to lead? You've got a fiery young woman and you've got an older woman with power who is not happy with this arrangement.
And the young woman is not happy with this arrangement,
exactly.
Like neither of them. So it is very interesting. And I like the idea that these two kind of discontented characters are put together. And I have to say, Rhaena gets far better quarters than Sansa got when she lived there. That was a beautiful room, but, it's interesting. We'll see what happens there.
Well, how far away is Dad? They talk about it, but how far away is Daemon from there?
I think it's relatively
It's close, right?
Far.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, Harrenhal's in the Riverlands, which is huge because that's where the Tullys also are. And I feel like in the Brackens and the Blackwoods, you know, the Riverlands are pretty large. I want to say the Eyrie is
I'm trying to find a map. Anyway.
Kind of northeast. I want to say maybe it's kind of somewhere between Winterfell and the Riverlands. I don't know. Well, let's look at a Westerosi map. But in my mind, that's where it's at.
Let's see. The Eyrie, the Vale, Gold. Some Game of Thrones fan tabulates distances between places in Westeros.
Of course.
From 2015. So I can't, it's not, it doesn't say what we're looking for, but.
I'm just looking at, okay, so Harrenhal is quite actually seems to be closer to King's Landing, and it's north of King's Landing.
Okay.
And then I'm looking for the Eyrie. Oh, and then you have the Twins are even, and the Twins are part of the Riverlands. So mm-hmm. the Twins are quite a ways. It's even further from Harrenhal than Harrenhal is from King's Landing. And then, Then there's Moat Cailin. Where is the Eyrie?
Oh, this is so fun.
I'm looking at this big map. Interactive map. I always thought the Eyrie was...
Oh, I see. No, the Twins to the Eyrie. It's not that far. Wait.
The Twins to the Eyrie. Oh, no,
Harrenhal to the Eyrie is not that far.
Is it east?
It is southeast.
Of Harrenhal.
No, the Eyrie is northwest or northeast. No, the Eyrie is northeast from Harrenhal. Yeah, I'm looking at a map right here. I maybe could share it somehow. I could send you the link.
Yeah.
That's a good map. I don't know even how to do these links live on the chat here.
Hmm.
Chat? Oh, I found it. This is exciting podcasting, but she could possibly.
I know. Can you see what we see?
The Vale of Arryn is right next to the Riverlands, and Harrenhal is not that far from the Eyrie. Harrenhal is, let's see, would be the same distance. Oh, it's way. It would be like Winterfell to the Dreadfort. That's about what it would be.
All right. That's,
if that helps.
I'm it's totally not that far. Missing it on the map I'm looking at. It's kind of weird. Okay.
Yep. That's interesting. Okay. That is very interesting.
Mm. Okay.
So it's possible that she could somehow get there or something or meet up with Daddy. She basically, it just makes me think she does have his temperament, right? She wants to, unlike her sister, I think, who seems more strategic, more maybe learned, she seems to be a little bit more interested in, she has that, she wants to get out there and do something, you know? You never know what could happen. But that, yeah, the scene, how about, did we talk also about Jace's scene with the phrase? That was...
Yeah, let's talk about that a little. It was fun. I'm glad to see that these Freys aren't as totally skeevy as old Walder Frey was.
But still a bit, though,
refreshing.
Right?
They're greedy, not skeevy.
You can tell the family, it's like, it's interesting, right? Like it, there's just a little bit. They wanted more. But I like the way they shot it, too, with him kind of the table being almost like, when they did the wider shot, he wasn't as sitting as far down as it seemed, but then he stands up, right? After he says to bend the knee, and he kind of towers over them, and it's like he has, in this moment, he has grown. It's a it's a great way of show don't tell, and they're showing that he is rising up over them, right? That he is kind of not only won the day in this conversation or this strategy here between houses, but he's also rising up within the ranks to his mom, which then we later see when they have their conversation, and she takes what he's done as something positive, even though he didn't have permission. So I thought it was great the way they shot that.
Well, yeah, it was great. I love the table in the middle of the crossing. And also, you know, you have to give it to Jace for also being diplomatic like his mother is, because, you know, maybe he wants their army. He needs the crossing, but really he doesn't have to ask permission for any troops to cross there because he has a dragon. And he could perch that dragon at the crossing and protect his men from crossing. But instead, he's a gentleman and he asks, you know, and
well,
these greedy
for the long run, right?
Yeah. And these greedy Freys want Harrenhal. Everyone wants that.
Why?
Dog. It's just like, why? I don't know.
That's because that's I was looking at that, too, while I was kind of looking at the map. I was like, why do they want Harrenhal? Like what strategically? It's near the God's Eye and Isle of Faces, and
they're closer to King's Landing, which maybe means they're, you know, they might be able to let go and drop in on, you know, the king or whoever is in charge more often.
True.
Maybe that's
A good way of saying it is the Eyrie is of almost equal distance to Harrenhal that King's Landing is, but on the other side. Actually, it's a little closer. So that's interesting. Mm. Oh, now I'm just all into this map. Okay, let's stop geeking out over a map, which still, when I look at it, it still looks like kind of the East Coast. I always think...
It looks like New Jersey?
Yeah, well, I always think like, you know, like Castle Black and like the wall is like Maine and like way up there, you know?
Yeah.
And then... Yeah, kind of Winterfell, you go down. Winterfell's kind of a little bit farther in, but, you know, it could be Bayonne. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you look at it right. All right, let's go. Let's talk about Lord Crispy, the king, the Crispy King, Double K.
And Alicent and all those dealings and the appointment of the new regent.
Yes, which was no surprise. That meeting, to me... I know Alicent felt they did a great job of shooting that too. And the wall, you know, like how it feels when you're kind of maybe going to have a panic attack or something.
Yes.
Or,
I was kind of waiting for her to have a, like, I felt like that's what she was really fighting. She acted her face off, which I always love. Yes. Yeah.
That was awesome. But not unexpected at all, right? Like, she should have known. Well,
not unexpected to everyone but her, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think.
Well, what moves has she made? What has she, like, this is what I'm saying. She, you know, it's like the whimpering cry when she leaves Aegon's room. Mommy, she's never treating the kids properly. She's not ingratiating herself. She's not understanding the power structure, even of when it comes to Sir Slimy. that's my new name for the man you love. She's not. Yeah, she's not doing that right with no one. Right, like it's so that to me that was a great scene of her understanding what's happening, but I also feel. I was also watching it feeling like, did she actually have any, what in what world did she expect them all to go, oh no, you be queen? I just didn't get it.
Well, I think, God, I hate to even like throw this kind of conversation out there because it's such a stereotype and a trope and everything else, but she was sleeping with one of the people on the council, the king's hand, and she's had foot play with another, and I don't know if she is dumb enough to, I mean, and she, you know, she was regent before and she had slept with the king. I don't want to say she thought she could sleep her way to the top, but that seems to be a pattern in this scenario. And I don't know if anyone's actually really taken her seriously before. And when her father was there, it was different. But the other time, and her father was there. So she's had these men around her that let her hold something of a position of power. Yet she was either sexually involved with all of them or related to them.
And she's not even doing that well because it's like, if that if this what was happening, then perhaps in the last scene we saw her with Laris. Now I know that was before what happened to Aegon, but she, slip off the shoe, make sure he's in your corner. Hey, next time, you're with Cole, You know what I'm saying? Tell him to, hey, check me out downtown. You know what I'm saying? Just like Damon and his mom.
No, but I almost think that's the mistake, though. She's never been taken seriously. Yeah. And so even pulling out those tricks, I still think she wouldn't have been taken seriously.
Had she never crossed
the line with Christian Cole, had she never crossed the line with Lara's, maybe she would have had a chance. But also, she's a weak leader, and she doesn't want to push back on what's already happened. And we saw that when Rhaenyra came to talk to her about the war. Like, Alicent could have at least, like, if she had any leadership chops whatsoever, she could have at least brought it up and tried and said, listen, I made a huge mistake. Like, she kind of like, oh, do you think that the king really wanted Aegon to be his heir to the maester? You know, she's like kind of slipped it in here and there, but she never really just said, we've made a huge mistake. We need to back off. I am negotiating this with Rhaenyra, and this is the way it's going to be. She could have at least tried to do that, and she didn't because she's weak and she just, you know, doesn't know. And she doesn't want to take accountability. She doesn't really want to be responsible at the end of the day. She just wants to, like, be a puppet in charge. And she doesn't realize she was a puppet for all those years. I think that's part of the problem.
I think you put it very well. And it was just interesting to me because that scene was more about her descending than Aemon ascending. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been shot or contextualized differently. They could have come into the scene saying, hey, this is about Aemon becoming king, essentially, right? Regent, but king. And what he did and what happened. But instead, it was really more about her further being put down, which I thought was an interesting choice. And obviously, as time goes on, perhaps I'll understand the way they did that better. But for me, I just kind of was watching it like, this is well done and cool. But she didn't even have a good relationship with the two guys that she thought might be on her side at that point. So why did she think they were going to go against the guy with the big ass dragon who just took someone down? You know what? So it's very interesting to me. I don't know. What do you think about Aemon as regent, as king at this point? I mean, he does, obviously he has had this thirst to get to this point.
Yes, he has.
Now that he's here, where does it go? That's what I'm interested in.
Well, at least he had ordered the rat catchers to be shaken down.
And that's what I was going to say. The first thing he says is actually smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first thing he does is smart. He says, take the frickin' rat catchers down. And the way he says it is with such a disdain of his dumb brother. Right. And that kind of acting like that as king, that it makes me feel like maybe Aemon, am I nuts? But in this world, maybe he won't be that bad. But let's see what he does. Is he going to go further? Because we know things are not going great in King's Landing, right? Like, they're being blockaded, so they don't, there's not a lot of food available.
Yeah, they have all that rotten food we saw in there, and you know, now they're not letting people supposedly in or out.
Yeah, it's like a fucking
city.
Berlin or some shit. That was like get over the wall.
I think Aemon, he's great at war strategy. We've seen that. I think he's got a good mind for strategy. I think he, in some ways, is highly logical. Does he understand the plight of the small folk? Doubtful. And I think that's what's really going to come back to bite him in the butt. Does he want to listen to his favorite lady at the brothel talk about the small people? She's talked to him. Will he listen and take that into consideration? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it, considering he's not letting anyone leave. And he doesn't seem, you know, I just... I think there's something's going to come back to bite him on the butt. Whereas here we are, Rhaenyra, she'll listen to what people say. She'll take things into consideration. I'm not that confident in Aemond. I think he's so happy, as much emotion as we see out of him. And maybe that's why he's always been so emotionless. Like, maybe he really is a true sociopath slash psychopath. You know, he's looking at that throne and his sister slash sister-in-law comes by and, you know, was it worth the sacrifice or was it worth it? You know, basically meaning killing his brother or, you know, toasting his brother. I don't have high hopes for Aemond. I think he's tons better than Aegon too, for sure. However, I think he's also driven by a kind of revenge and, you know, I'm finally leading, and all these people used to tease me and make fun of me when I was a kid, and mm-hmm. I'll show them type of thing. I think he's fueled by some revenge there too. So
It's always dangerous. I always tell my son, if you ever hear a person tell a story about how they were like, they're successful because people put them down and they rose over them, stay away from that person. That's not the kind, right? Like, those are always the fucking egomaniac psychos, you know, like that they push themselves through like they were humiliated and now they have to prove themselves, because it never ends. That's they need to be on couples therapy with Orna.
Oh my God.
Let's see, what else were we talking about? There was something when we were talking about King's Land. Oh, did we talk about the dragon head, as far as, you know, that happening and Hugh and his wife? And because I think it's interesting what's happening. I like that we're checking in with that. And that was interesting to me, that was seen as like a dark omen. And it was also, I guess, seen as like, hey, a dragon can be killed. They're not that power. Like, are we that safe? You know what I mean? I think it was interesting to me that I thought that it wasn't triumphant, and Cole was upset about that too, but it was, I didn't figure that would be that way.
I think this kind of goes to show how out of touch the royals are with the people that live in their city and make it run. You know, they understand that someone's going to grieve a child that was murdered in their bed, but they don't understand that a lot of the reverence maybe the people have for them is because of those dragons. Mm. You know, that's where the shock and awe comes from, right? That's why people bow down. And, you know, is it because a dragon was felled, or because it was felled by another dragon? And this is supposed to be a family too. And even the dragons are at each other. So, and that's something clearly that, you know, I don't think Aemond understood. You know, I don't know if he wasn't regent at the time that head went through the streets, but, you know.
Was it just a distraction for the king in the box?
I think so. Which, right? Oh my gosh. Like, I think it's like that was like a livestock litter. You know, it's like what they transport chickens in.
I was like, what's going on? I was like, is that supposed to be Rhaenys's body or something? In which I think that's what the people thought it was. And then my wife says, I bet you Aegon's in that.
Yeah.
And they're sneaking him in. And I was like, damn, that's why I married you. And she was right. And I was like, oh, fuck. And then the way they're like taking care of him and pulling off the armor. And it's just, I mean, that armor didn't seem to do much against the fire and what happened to him, but that was awful.
Well, armor cooks. Armor heats up and burns you. And that was kind of like, I was like, maybe he's like kind of partial Targaryen, because most men that get hit with that dragon fire like disintegrate in their armor, and he did not.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still alive. I guess he has some Targaryen dragon fire protection. Yeah. But that was awful. And if I'm right, I was trying to place it similar to like the kind of arms in Star Wars. His dad had I think his dad had the right side of his face covered, and for him the left side of his face was totally burnt off. So that's the old kind of right, like,
I've seen comparison memes.
Okay.
About
I haven't seen that. Okay, cool. Yeah. So that occurred to me, because in seeing that, it was very reminiscent of his father, the skin, right? The maesters around him. So they end up the same way through different paths, but they end up the same way. It's a, that throne is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He did a pretty good acting, a little bit of acting job there too. Not too difficult to act like you're fucked up, but he did a good, and the mommy was.
Mommy. Oh.
Really? Oh. Like, you don't even fucking stay with the kid. I mean, for Christ's sake, like, seriously, it's your kid.
Well, I don't, to be fair, I don't know if she heard him, and I don't know if she thought he was.
But still, like, you gotta stay by the, you know, stay by the bedside.
She's got things to do, you know?
Yeah, she's got Cole to go hang out with so he can lie to her about what happened, right? He didn't want to tell her what really happened. He's covering. And do you think he was a little spooked? Or was he just didn't want to talk to her?
I think it was a little bit of both. You know, I think it's, you know, remember when like Jamie came back from the battle where they burn the loot train, and he's just like, it is unbelievable, Cersei. Yep. It is like nothing I've ever seen before. You know, it's kind of like that on a much lesser scale. But I think it was even, you know, I think the dragons fighting probably upset him too. But he also, you know, I know I mentioned it last week, but I don't know how many people really picked up on it when Kristen Cole was approaching Aegon's downed dragon, and Aegon and Aemond was standing there. Aemond was starting to draw his sword to finish off his brother.
Totally.
And I believe Kristen Cole saw that and was like, you know, and so now he's like, he was made Hand of the King by one guy. He's kind of bros with the other guy. He's sleeping with their mom. He just saw a bunch of men burned in their armor. He's got to be having some feels.
Yes.
So I think it's a lot of stuff he's grappling with and thinking, you know, maybe I just should have gotten over Rhaenyra dumping me in the first place and none of this would be happening.
Maybe I should have just went on Facebook and done like a life isn't fair, but I'll move on. You know, conscious uncoupling.
He could have still been boinking her. You know, that was a thing. She's like, we can still be together. And he would have none of
it. But that's what hangs over all of this, Gina, right? Is that he's the man. He thinks he's some fucking man of honor. Right.
Right.
And now he's involved in like some vast conspiracy to usurp the king. He knows what happened. He saw what happened.
Yeah.
And then he saw this, the follow-up of him almost taking out his brother and then taking his taking the special sword, little knife, and walking off. So I think that to me, I'm interested to see, because they've also brought in the brother. What's his name again? Sir Gwyneth or something? Sir Gwyn?
Gwaine.
Gwaine. So that is interesting to me too, that dynamic. But I think... perhaps, I don't know. We already saw Cole once almost like kill himself because of what he did, right? Mm-hmm. In front of the Weirwoods. So that was a strong, I don't know. I don't trust that guy anyway. It's like with, you know, you don't trust people who are motivated by revenge or people who think they're more honorable than everyone because they're usually dangerous.
As it says in the burn book, this man is the nastiest skank bitch I've ever met. Do not trust him. He is a fugly slut.
Oh, gosh. All right. What? I think you want to talk. I think we reached. What else? Yep. Is there anything else? We could talk some dragons.
Let's talk dragons. Cool. So this was one of my favorite parts of the whole episode because they're talking about their lack of dragons. There's no way they're going to win this war. And I think it's Jace that says, well, we do have two other dragons in the cave beneath us that are, I think these are termed the wild dragons.
Yes.
Or two wild dragons in
Daemon
in
talked
the book.
About them before too.
I think Daemon went in and got that clutch of eggs from them. So,
right. So
that's also very interesting because those were Dany's eggs that came from these wild dragons. But, you know, they have names. Their names are, I didn't realize this. Where's my cheat sheet? My dragon and dragon rider cheat sheet. One is named Vermithor and the other is named Silverwing.
Ooh, I like them. I like Vermithor.
I do too. Yeah, nice Vermithor names. And Silverwing. So we've got Vermithor, Silverwing that don't have riders. And then we also have Laenor's dragon Sea Smoke that's out there without a rider.
Yep.
So there's potential for three more. And Rhaenyra has the idea. She goes, well, you know, there are other Targaryens. We just don't necessarily recognize them as Targaryens because they married into other families or they're bastards, which we know of potentially at least, well, one Targaryen bastard, if that guy Ulf from the tavern a couple episodes ago
Really
is the son of a bastard Targaryen, he's a candidate to ride. Who's got tickets to ride? He's a candidate to ride.
But he is also in King's Landing, though.
He's in King's Landing. Well, all these people are in King's Landing, I'm pretty sure. Not all of them, but a couple are. I wonder about Hugh.
Yeah, we've got to be seeing him for some reason. And he's a good-looking dude, right? Like, Hugh,
and he's got
he's a
really
hero.
Long, grayish blonde hair.
Yeah, he's that, hero casting.
Yeah, he and Ulf could pass for brothers. In fact, the first time I saw Ulf, I was like, is that the Hugh guy? Just because they do have a similar look, whether that's close to a Targaryen look or not, you know, I couldn't say, but... So we've got those two. Then we've also got, they're Valyrian. We've got Ser Corlys's two bastards, Alyn and Adam. We did see Sea Smoke kind of flying by Adam, yep. I think, at one point, which would kind of make sense because it's a very, he's kind of similar in stature to Laenor.
True.
You know,
but Laenor's still alive. Let's not forget Laenor's still alive.
Laenor's still alive. We don't know if news of this is crossing the Narrow Sea to him, wherever he's at partying on an island with boys.
Yes. He's at Ibiza.
Right. So those are three obvious ones. There might be others in kind of married in the bloodline. I think we're going to see a whole like, my God, Axel, it's like The Bachelor for dragon riders.
They should do a spinoff, right? That's what they need. Some of them get burned. Who'll get burned?
So it's kind of this whole, let's see what happens. Let's see who they pull out of the woodwork to try and potentially ride some of these dragons. And let's see if the dragons end up deciding who they want to ride. And I also kind of thought Missaria Sea Smoke was kind. He was very restless around her. And she even said, maybe he's just lonely, you know, and we don't know Misaria's origins. You know, I would say based on her accent last year, last season, she came from across the narrow sea. Yes, however,
it seems that way.
You know, we don't really know. Maybe she was just putting that on. She doesn't look like a Targaryen by any means, but you know, neither do Adam or
Alan.
Adam or Alan. Well, and Alan has his head shaved, so I'm wondering if Alan let his hair grow in, would it be white like a Targaryen? That would be interesting to find out.
I think it's going to be cool. I thought it was really, I did not expect this conversation to go in this direction. And I got excited when they started talking about it. And I was like, this is going to be fun. I like this. Yes. This is cool. We got to see some new dragon riders. And this is the Dance of Dragons. So we need more dragons.
Well, and it's really, I think it's smart of them to have this conversation. You know who's not having this conversation? The Greens.
Yeah, true.
They haven't even thought, they've got the big baddie, so they think they've got it in the bag.
Exactly.
But, you know, if Aemon was smarter, which I would think he would be, like, he had to claim that big dragon. He should be thinking, there are a couple other dragons out there that should be claimed. And then I'm just looking at this dragon cheat sheet I put together. Some of this was from last year. Now, we know that Daeron, who is the fourth child of Alicent, he actually has a dragon, too. It's named Tatharion. So
that's a good name, too.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
We got, of course, the little ones, but they're really small out at the Vale.
Right. Yeah, we've got a few of the little ones out of the Vale. That's like, I think it's Tyraxes and...
and they said they left Aegon's dragon, right? Didn't they leave his dragon?
But the dragon's dead.
Oh, it's dead. Okay, I thought that it was dying or very injured or something.
I think, what was the way... Kristen Cole, he took a long time. The dragon took a long time dying. So I figured that meant completely dead.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that part then.
Yeah.
That's interesting. We shall see. I look forward to, I remember of course, what comes to mind when I think of someone cuddling up to a dragon when Tyrion went down to visit the dragon. That was classic. Oh, that was amazing.
And you know, that was the one thing, like, we did get to see Jon Snow ride a dragon in Game of Thrones, but I always thought there were definitely going to be two other dragon riders for those dragons. We did, I guess, the Night King after that dragon died, which I don't really count that, but I've always thought about who would that third dragon rider be. And I always thought Tyrion was an option because, you know, it's all kind of rumored that the Lannisters might have Targaryen blood. He might in particular. He was obsessed with dragons. He would dream about dragons. So that was something I was kind of hoping to see, you know, when Game of Thrones was still on. Clearly it's not going to happen, but I like this idea about, you know, dragons finding their dragon riders. And
me too.
I think that makes it even kind of more magical. Like, all of a sudden it's like, you get a dragon and you get a dragon and magic everywhere.
That's what I love it too. Yes. Yeah. It will be very fun to see. Great episode. We have, let's see, we only have three more episodes left, 6, 7, and 8. We are going to have, hopefully, I think Bubba and Catfish are coming on next week. I'm not sure. We'll see if they can come out. I've talked to, I think Andy wants to join us for an episode.
Oh, yeah.
And Heath may join us, but he said, I'd love to come on a finale if you bring Matt back. So maybe for our finale, we'll bring Matt and Heath.
And totally.
We'll have all four of us chat about the finale of season two.
Yeah. Yeah. And Heath can tell us all his woes about this season.
Yeah. Well, hopefully
maybe it'll end on a high note for him.
Yeah. He'll get more into it because I've been loving it. And it's just, I mean, just from a production, I could just every time before we hit record, I said, I'm always thinking, I just want to talk about how good it looked. It looks so good. It's such a beautiful production. And I'm always just looking in the background and the details, everything.
And they've got all the locations that hit a soft spot. Like that one episode that opened at Winterfell, basically, yeah. I was like, oh, you know, it. Yep. And that's it. You know, you're kind of like nostalgic for people and places that that haven't come to be yet. And, you know, honestly, that's one of the reasons I was always kind of a mixed bag about the Jon Snow spinoff, which has been canned, I think, officially.
Yeah.
Now,
they couldn't find the story.
Oh, well, you know, well, to find the story, you have to make sure you can have some of your favorites come back. Tyrion, Brienne of Tarth. Like, you have to be able to get some of those people back in the mix somehow and make it work. Arya, you know, it can't just be about Jon Snow being north. You have to infuse some of those beloved characters and places to make it work. Even though he's north of the wall, like this, you still have to see them kind of come into play somehow. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, for all the crap that the corporation of Warner Brothers Discovery and that HBO has gone through, and HBO Go and all this bullshit, right? And Max. Right. It's a wonder that this show turned out so well. I mean, I've only seen one or two stills from the Hedge Knight series, but if it's the same people, I think it'll be awesome. I don't know. You have to think someday they are going to go back to that well. You know, maybe it could be 10 years from now.
Right. Yeah.
Who knows when Disney owns HBO? Maybe they'll go back, but we'll see what happens. For now, I'm just always so excited that this show is just looks so great. I love being in this world, and I love talking to you about it, Gina. This was a great episode.
Me too. Yeah. No, it was fun. I can't wait for next week. I think it's going to be really interesting. So
awesome.
Yeah.
It'd be great. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for downloading. Hey, don't forget, you can go to Tubi and watch the Star City Murders that Heath stars in for free. Just look up Star City. If you don't see it on the homepage, it's awesome. And become a patron, patreon.com/DVR. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, all patrons, keeping us going. And we will be back. Mayor of Kingstown only got a couple episodes left. We only got a couple left here, and then we got to figure out something else. When's Handmaid's Tale coming back? When are you returning, Gina?
Ooh, sometime in 2025. The world doesn't explode before that. Well, Elizabeth Moss, she filmed The Veil, which some people may have watched on Hulu.
Yes.
And then she also had a baby.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw an interview with her a few months ago, and she was very pregnant. She was at least like 7 or 8 months pregnant at that point. So I believe she has had a baby, and that, you know, now they'll be able to get back to, you know, some filming shortly if they haven't already. So, yeah. Thank you. I think 2025 is what is queued up to be.
Well, we'll podcast about something before then.
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm sure there will be some fun stuff to do.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Peace out.